Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
Hello, welcome to my podcast. This is Ramona Houston, and I am absolutely delighted to have you here with me today. And today I am interviewing Dr. Robin Siebert, who is a doctor of clinical psychology. I must admit, Robin is my cousin, and she's like a favorite in the family. So I do want to say that we love her dearly. She's like your ride and die cousin that'll do anything, anything for you. So she is almost like a sister to me. But anyway, I'm so delighted to have her here with me. She is a licensed specialist in school psychology, and she works for an independent school district in the state of Texas, where she evaluates students to determine disability for special education services. And we know in the African American and Latino communities that education is a vital component of empowering our communities. And since she works in the school district, I know she has a lot of insight on how we can help students better move through the education system. She works in K-12 and really helping them to prepare them for college, higher education, or just preparing them for life. So I'm sure she has a lot of insight to share with us about students in the school district. So welcome, Robin. Glad to have you here, cousin.
Thank you so much for having me. Cousin, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, doing fine. So tell us about your work, and also can you tell us a little bit about how it relates to the Black and Brown communities as well?
Absolutely. So what I do, because I work in the state of Texas, then I look for disability for special education services. In my particular state, we have what we call diagnosticians. So while I have the ability and the training to do evaluation for learning disabilities in our particular state, in my particular independent school district that I work for, they do a lot of that testing. So a lot of the educational testing. So that allows us the opportunity to focus solely on testing for mental health support. So any student that has what we deem as an emotional disturbance, as well as working on evaluating for students who have autism. So those are my two areas that I generally evaluate in.
So tell me about, go ahead.
What I've learned and what I've seen over the years is that I think there is definitely, especially within our communities, the Black and Brown communities, a misconception and a misunderstanding of special education services. It is very different than when you and I went to school. You know, that was something that was kind of a stigma that was placed on kids. It was something that you didn't want to be a part of. It was something where they put those other kids, and it was really used to distinguish and to really disproportionately affect those communities, like the Black and Brown communities. What has happened as there have been revisions and changes to what we call IDEA, which is the Individual Disabilities Education Act, as the changes have been wrought, special education services is more about support and leveling the playing field for students who have significant needs, right? And so what we will find is that Black and Brown parents at times, African American parents, will be very resistant to evaluation and supports, or be very unaware of what things are available to them through evaluation. And those are things that I would like to get forward, because I think there are a lot of misconceptions out there.
So let me ask you a question. I'm glad to hear that about the evolution of special education services, because I know my sister, as you know, she came of age in Atlanta. She went to junior high and high school here in Atlanta. And one of the jokes she used to say that the kids, other kids used to make fun of kids who rode the short bus. They say, ah, you ride the short bus, because, you know, the short bus was for special education kids. So, yeah. So that goes back to your point about the stigma attached.
There's a stigma.
And so looking at the, you talked about support services and leveling the playing field. What does that look like? What type of services do you advise for students when you see that they need special education services?
Absolutely, because students can actually meet criteria for disability in multiple areas. So some of the areas would be that they have some sort of learning disability, and they've even drilled it down to a specific learning disability. Are they struggling with reading? Are they struggling with certain parts of writing? Are they struggling with certain parts of math? Are these things that are inherently an issue for them? Are they several grades behind in those areas and are not making the gains to catch up? And they're not making the gains because there is some sort of cognitive issue. Like, so what they look at both is not only how you're doing academically, but they look and see if there's any sort of cognitive issues within your IQ profile. So they look at cognitive testing as well as academic testing to see if those things match up to determine whether or not you have a learning disability. Okay. So we have a lot of students who have maybe processing deficits. Well, if you're having a slow time processing, then it would make sense that you also will struggle with reading fluency or text fluency because it's taking you longer to process the information that you're reading. So they look in those areas and they look at if it's significant enough to call it a disability. Okay. Also, for students who have significant mental health issues. So a lot of my students you have students every day that are wrestling with many different things. I mean, think about society. And as society has gotten sicker, I mean, we have children who have significantly more behavioral issues, more emotional issues. I think there are absolutely systemic issues of trauma, especially within our communities, especially within our families. And so you do see some of that, but you also see significant mental health issues. So if a child is having such significant issues with, say, depression, where they're not able to fully engage in the classroom, they're not able to fully function, they're overwhelmed, they're acting out, then we look to see if that is a disability. Is that something that we can support through a counseling support? Or perhaps we put some behavioral things in place for them in the classroom. The other aspect, we have children who can have absolutely like antipsychotic issues, like, so we have schizophrenic children. Now, that's very rare, but you do have those pediatric bipolars, pediatric schizophrenics. They now call it disruptive mood disorder, but a lot of times they're showing that they're having some manic and depressive symptoms at the same time. And another very common issue that is coming up for a lot of children is anxiety. And it's anxiety to the point where they're not able to come to school. They're not wanting to come to school. They're not functioning at school. They're not functioning in the classroom. And so those things are keeping them from being fully academically and emotionally, socially successful in the school system, right? So we look at it from that standpoint. You also have a large range of students who are within with autism. You know, that's quite a range on that autism spectrum. So you have students who are much higher functioning. Those students can function in the classroom, but maybe they have some significant social issues and they need some social supports for them to better understand how to engage and how to interact with their peers. And then you have students who have some severe autism concerns, which may include sensory integration deficits, or they may include significant speech and language deficits, are what we call stereotyped and restrictive behaviors. And so we look at what supports we can put in place for them to help them be successful in whatever environment in the classroom or in the academic setting that they'll be best served in. And we also look at other health impairment, which could be anything from a medical issue, such as a traumatic brain injury, to attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. That's where those issues that are very medically, you know, aligned, that's what we look at. So, I mean, it's just a range of disabilities that we can support kids with. So I think sometimes we're not aware of all the different options that are there.
So when you talk about, I'm sure you don't, or it's my assumption that you don't evaluate every student in the school. So how do you identify the students that need an evaluation?
There are two ways. Every school in our district does what they call response to intervention, so RTI. So there's a process that they go through where they put goals in place. They put markers in place. They have evaluations in place to look at reading skills. They look at math skills. They look at social skills. They look at behavioral skills. And then if a child is having significant issues, then they start to put interventions in place and they look at if they're responding to those interventions. So it goes up a tier. Mm-hmm. So you have tier one, which is where majority of kids are. So we put interventions and different things in place for them, and they respond well and they do well and they're academically successful. They're emotionally successful. If they're not, then they go to tier two. And that's where you start to put in individualized goals, you know, for these students. And so once it gets to the point where we've put all these interventions in place, we've looked at goals, we've put other behavioral goals, we've put other academic goals, we've met, we've talked to parents. If those things are not being supported, then they may refer them for special education testing. So that's one way, right? The other way is that parents are concerned. And so parents may request testing because they're concerned about the way that their child is being supported in the classroom, or they're concerned about some of the deficits that they're seeing or some of the behavioral things that they're seeing. From a younger standpoint, we have what we call Child Find. And so they go, and Child Find is, you have to look at these younger babies, you know, between 2 and 6 years old. And so you're wanting to make sure that we are supporting kids who may have some speech and language deficits or may have some other deficits between those ages so that we can maybe close those gaps before they get into the school system, right? So, and that goes across the board, the Child Find does, but that is another area that we hit pretty often where we do what we call preschool evaluation. And a lot of times that's parents coming in, but that's also us going into the community and asking about concerns and seeking help to find out if there are any concerns or issues.
So thanks for sharing that with our audience about, you know, how we identify students who may need special education services. Now, as parents, and not only as parents, but as family members, because as you know, it takes a village to raise a child.
Yes, absolutely.
So there are causes for these issues, right? So what can we do to, I don't know what word to use, prevent or kind of, I know some of these issues are not preventable, but what can we Absolutely. Do to create an environment or help students or help young people so that they don't necessarily need special education services? In other words, what can we do to address the underlying causes?
Well, I think that's a really good question. I think there are a few things at play here. I think there are definitely some genetic predispositions, right? So if your parents or you have family members that have speech and language deficits, then there is a genetic predisposition towards a speech and language deficit, correct? So there are some things that, again, just cannot be necessarily caught. There are some things that can be remediated. And there are things that we can put supports in place to help a student reach their fullest potential. But things like learning disabilities, speech and language issues, autism, even mental health or mental illness, those are not necessarily things that can be prevented. Okay. What I would say for our families is that one of the things that can help, especially when we're looking at learning and support, is early intervention in learning, right? So early reading, Head Start programs, looking to see if your school district has pre-K programs or any type of early programs that encourage reading and growth and learning and teaching kids how to learn. We do have a uptick in things like attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. You know, I've read many research. I think there's a toss-up between how much time we are engaging in video, you know, like technical interaction, and how that shapes and maps the brain, right, to how kids are able to sit and function in a classroom. The other aspect of that is that we've taken away a lot of the things that help kids get those energies out, right? So when I was in school, I remember having recess 3 times a day. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember having like a morning recess, a recess after lunch. I think we had like afternoon recess. Like, we were constantly moving, you know. And I think that we've gone to the point where we are asking kids to sit for a long period of time. And I do think for a lot of school districts and a lot of education agencies around the country, they recognize that that is no longer a really viable way to teach, even especially our younger kids. And so there's a more of a push for continued activity, like movement. They call them brain breaks. And, you know, and some of these absolutely help in the classroom. But, you know, some of these kids, ADHD is definitely a developmental lag in the brain. Mm. And so really wanting to look at how much of this is like we're lagging in development and growth of the brain, and how much of this is I have excess energy and have some other.
Considering all this research, it might work for adults too. I need a brain break every
and then it's so great to go into those little classrooms. Like, I just, all my kids, you know, I love going to the classroom and observing. But I love going to the classroom during brain break because they do electric slide. You know, they're like doing all these things, and the kids are like just so animated. And I love it.
So I want to push back or kind of get you to elaborate more about this technology piece and young people being in front of the TV too much, yeah, being in front of the phone and the technology, the iPads, the computers, although that may be an issue instead of them being sitting and engaging and reading, because you're always looking at all these images and this, right, and that. But with technology, we're moving toward a society, a global society that has technology in everything. Even the way kids learn math is on a computer, or the way we teach concepts. So how do you balance between the two?
Yes. Technology is absolutely used 100% in the classroom. You know, I think that at young ages, though, I think it's gotten to the point where at very young ages, and I don't know if you've seen this, where I've seen, you know, kids in the grocery store with their parents, and they're like 1 and 2 years old, and they're glued to their parents' phone, yes, watching, yes, like a cartoon. And so to me, and just in a lot of the research that I've looked at, that time, your brain continues to grow, but there is a huge amount of mapping during like birth to 2 years old, right? So there's a huge amount of mapping within the brain. And so if you are just constantly being inundated with images, and your brain is not actually getting a lot of work out, you know, reading, being outside, visualization, you know, those things are visual. There's a brain workout because it's working out depth perception and visual spatial perception. And, you know, that to me is, I feel, causes a lot of issues if you're especially during those very vital early brain development years when you're using significant amount of technology. I think that we are trying to now dial back how much technology we use and in what way we're using it.
So what do you suggest for parents, you know, that and how to keep the mind development going during those early years instead of handing them the phone? What do you suggest for parents?
I suggest that, you know, some of the things that you did when you were kids, help your parents pick out the food in the grocery store. Mm. A lot of the grocery stores still have the little baby carts. Let them drive their little baby carts and bring those. Engage them in outside activities, engage them in one-on-one activities, engage them in building blocks, Legos, just things that allow their brains to be free. Sit and read with them. Look at pictures. If you have the ability, go to museums. Just giving them a lot of different visual stimuli as well as oral, like talking to them and getting a lot of that interaction and engagement, because our kids also come to school without knowing how to socially engage mm-hmm. with each other. Mm-hmm. So just providing that social engagement. And please don't get me wrong, parenting is hard. It is hard. And I will be the first one to tell you that as a parent of two kids and two kids that were pretty close in age, there are plenty of times where I'm like, sit down, watch this movie. You know, like, I've got stuff to do. So my thing is also take it off the back burner. Don't be so hard on yourself as a parent. If you need them to sit and have that technology, just do that, you know? But at the same time, try and dial back and also incorporate those real-life experiences. And even now, as my children are teenagers, I'm like, put the phone down. Everybody look out the window.
Yes. You know, and how about going outside? I mean, kids don't even do, like you just talked about imagination and right. and social skills. I remember going over to my grandparents' house and us playing games outside, all kinds of games. Yeah. And when somebody was out, if we were playing kickball and somebody else said, no, I'm safe, we had to figure that out. You know, yeah, we had to work it out.
That's problem solving.
Without taking the ball and going home, you know?
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So, and, you know, we find that kids don't have those skills.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
A lot of kids are not. They're not playing. And you do see it. I mean, kids can certainly be overscheduled. I think if anything that the quarantine has taught us is that kids were overscheduled. And mm-hmm. there were a lot of kids that needed that time to slow down. There were a lot of families
yes.
that needed that time to just slow down and be with each other. You know, we put together Legos, we did painting, you know, just things that you haven't really had time to do.
Yeah.
So I just think that we as a society are moving incredibly fast as well.
And we just need to slow down.
To slow down and find some activities that we enjoy doing together. But, you know, in the car, I mean, we're all on our phone, like we're listening to books on tape or, you know, reading books. And I think we all have to get to the point where we're like, let's play the game.
Yes.
You know, let's do something where you're going back and re-engaging with the game.
Well, this is all great advice and really an eye-opener for me on, you know, special education and how it has evolved since I was in school.
I was going to say, what I really want our Black and brown parents to do is really become more aware and understanding of special education and special education laws. I think that while they're not perfect, absolutely, I think there are certainly some states that still have disproportionate numbers of African-American students falling under special education. I think that you still need to go and really educate yourself on the laws of special education, because if your child is truly needing support and is truly struggling, those laws are put in place to level the playing field. It is not saying it, and I get this from my parents all the time. Well, I don't want them to use this as a crutch. You know, that is not a crutch. What it says is, with all things being equal for my student, then my student will be here. You know, like, my student can make it to this. This is their level. But when all things are not equal for my student, then they are struggling and they are failing. And so I think there has to definitely be a readdressing in our minds of what special education services are and how we as a community can use that to support our children who are truly in need of those services.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Siebert. I really, really appreciate this call and informing our audience on special education and what we can do to support the learning and education of our young people. This was an important conversation, and I know you have so much more, so I'm going to have you back soon. Very, very soon, cousin. So thank you so much, and looking forward to having you as a guest again soon.
Thank you, Dr. Houston.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song. NADWorks, digital support. And, of course, our featured guest.